This morning's reading from the Sermon on the Mount is Matthew 5, verses 13 to 16. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything, except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven.
The Sermon on the Mount, and what I want to do just very quickly is recap for you. If you missed last week, if you weren't here, if you're new to what happened last week, that's fine too. It happens every Monday. I have to remind myself of what I preached on Sunday so that I can write the next sermon for the following Sunday, because by Monday morning I've put it out of my mind, and so I have to remind myself. Sometimes I go back and listen to it, which is a painful process. Have you, any of you listened to your own voice? Like, it's hysterical. Anyway, so what I want to do is just real brief recap for you. Matthew 5, Jesus starts the Sermon on the Mount. And we talked a little bit last week how Sermon on the Mount gives it a little bit of misconception in our minds, because we talk about a sermon like, you know, what we do every Sunday, or what I get to do most Sundays. I preach a sermon and people sit and listen. And in a sense, that's what Jesus is doing, but it's more direct teaching than that. So in the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount, we read that there were a bunch of crowds gathering, a bunch of people gathering. So Jesus actually takes his disciples and he goes up this mountain. Mountain, again, is a little bit of a misnomer, but he goes up this mountain and begins to teach the disciples. And so it's pointed teaching at the disciples. What does it mean to be a follower of Jesus? What does it mean to live in the kingdom of heaven? What is the culture that Christians, that followers of Jesus, are supposed to embody? And then what happens is slowly the crowds start to hear and listen and gather around Jesus. And so his teaching has this dual purpose, right? It's direct teaching at his disciples, to his disciples, to those who call themselves followers of Jesus. But these other people who may be farther off, or maybe don't believe that God is who he says he is, that Jesus is the Son of God, aren't following him yet, also hear and begin to listen. And so it's teaching that has this kind of this dual purpose. And it's a teaching, like I said, about what it means to live inside the kingdom of heaven, what it means to embody the culture of the kingdom is kind of the language we used last week. And then we got into the Beatitudes, these statements, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are the meek, blessed are those who mourn, blessed, he says, he even goes on to say, are you when you are persecuted, when you're persecuted because of me, because you're a follower of Jesus. And we talked about how these statements are basically the value statements of the kingdom of heaven, right? Like, they are the defining statements of what it means to be a follower of Jesus and to live inside the kingdom of heaven, and they ought to define all of our life, and that it actually defines a kingdom that is completely upside down, right? It actually defines this kingdom that doesn't work like we would imagine it to or picture it to. The kingdom of heaven is this upside down thing where Jesus said, blessed are those who mourn. Man, like, it just doesn't feel like you're blessed when you mourn. It says, blessed are the meek, the humble, right? Those who are persecuted, those who suffer, the peacemakers. So he goes on to describe this state of being for followers of Jesus that is not what we would picture as a strong and bold kingdom. And yet we know that that's how Jesus works. And so today, we come to this passage, which, if you've grown up in the church, I'm sure you've heard before, a passage on what it means to, as Jesus says, to be salt and light in the world. And the way I think about this passage, these verses, is basically like this. If you take all the Beatitudes you know, and you look at them and you say, okay, this describes an upside down kingdom. This describes something that doesn't maybe on the surface make sense. This describes something that looks a little bit strange. This describes, like I said last week, like the last picked at every sporting event ever. Like these look like people who are not going to go on to do great things in the world. And yet Jesus says, this is what we ought to live our lives like. The salt and light, the verses that we're going to go into are essentially the why. Why are we to embody the Beatitudes? Why are we to look like this? Why are followers of Jesus supposed to be poor in spirit and mourn and meek and those who hunger and thirst for righteousness and those who are merciful, those ready to show mercy, those who are pure in heart? Why are we supposed to look like this as followers of Jesus? He goes on to say, and you can almost insert, I mean, don't insert here, it's not there, but you can almost insert the word because. Blessed are you. And then he goes on to say, because you are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. Because. It's this, we embody the Beatitudes, we embody what it means to live inside the culture of the kingdom because there is a purpose to our being here. Because there is a mission that we are going to be sent on. Because there is something for us to do. And Jesus says that reason is you are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. And so I'm just going to reread a little bit here. Verse 13, it says, you are the salt of the earth. And again, if you have a Bible in front of you, even if it's not yours, even if it's the church Bible, just like underline and circle that sentence. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. And so the first thing that I want us to notice, and we're going to notice it here, and we're going to notice it in the next section about light, is that Jesus says you are the salt of the earth. It's not you will become the salt of the earth, or if you try hard enough, you can be the salt of the earth. It's a statement of fact. You are. That is to say, if you call yourself a follower of Jesus, if you are a Christian, if you believe that Jesus is who he says he is, that he rose from the dead, you are necessarily the salt of the earth. This is what it means to be a follower of Jesus. Again, like I said, he's going to go on to say, you are the light of the world. Again, a statement of fact, a statement that defines who we are as followers of Jesus in the world. You are salt and you are light. And so you can underline, highlight, circle, put asterisks, just arrows pointing at those two sentences, because those are the things that should stick out to you if you call yourself a follower of Jesus. And that is to say that the next 20 minutes... Connie tells me, so right before I got up to preach, she said, you shouldn't be worried about going short. You should always be worried about being too long. So for the next who knows how long we're going to be together, this isn't optional for you. Okay, so you can't leave. I'm sorry, you're stuck here. Not that kind of optional, not what we're doing here. Though I would also say that about worship. Worship is a non-negotiable. What I mean is these verses are non-negotiable for us if you call yourself, like I do, a follower of Jesus. And that kind of extends all through the Sermon on the Mount, which is going to get painful at times. It's going to get awkward at times. It's going to make us feel this tension at times of, I don't want to be this way. I don't want to live into this. I don't want to step into this role. I don't want to fill this role or do this task in the world. It's going to feel like that at times. Salt and light, being salt and light, I think, is one of those times, but it's a non-negotiable. Jesus says, you are the salt of the earth. You're kind of stuck in it. This is the reality for you. You are the light of the world. You're stuck. That's your role. That is what it means to be a follower of Jesus. We are salt. We are light. So that's the first thing I want us to notice. The second thing is that in talking about salt and light, Jesus is saying something very specific, both about his followers and about the world. And that is to say that if Jesus' followers are salt and are light, that is to necessarily say that the world needs salt and the world needs light. What does that say about the world? So salt, we use it for the most part as a flavor enhancer, right? If you're like me, your doctor tells you every time you go, you're putting too much salt on things. We add it to just about everything to make things taste better. It's a flavor enhancer. And for sure, it was that in Jesus' day, but this is probably not going to come as a surprise to many of you. How many of you like beef jerky? Okay, there's a few of us here, all right? I noticed that, I think that was all men who put their hands up. I don't know what that says. Anyways, we eat too much salt. That's what it says. So salt was a preservative in Jesus' day, and it still is, right? How many of you have left meat out on the table overnight? Like, you've done your grocery shopping, and you did your list, and you were successful in getting everything on your list, and if you're like me, it's more successful if you get only what's on your list and not, like, 50 or 60 other things that weren't on the list that we don't need, that we probably already have 10 of because I bought them the last time. But then you do all your grocery shopping and you put it all away and you put it all into the, you know, cupboards and into the fridge and you feel good about yourself. No, I'm the only person who does this and feels good. Okay, all right. And then the next morning you get up and you're like, oh, I didn't put those steaks in the fridge. All right. That hasn't happened to anybody? No? All right. Again, I'm the only person who likes doing science experiments with my groceries. Okay, that's fine. Let me tell you, it doesn't end well. It doesn't end well. You don't put leftovers in the fridge, and that leftovers were chicken, like it's chicken. So you like, Connie makes a great chicken dinner, and then I forget to put it in the fridge, and then I feel terrible about it because it spoils, right? Meat spoils. If it's raw and you leave it out at room temperature, it rots, it decays. It's what happens. You haven't experienced this because you are more conscientious than I am, but let me tell you, it decays really quickly. Even faster in the summer, meat decays, it rots, it stinks. That is what naturally happens to things that aren't preserved, right? That is, unless you mix salt into it. In Jesus' day, salt was rubbed into the meat, on the meat, and then it was dried, sometimes over a fire, sometimes just in the air. That's how it was preserved. If it was preserved properly, it could last for weeks, months, even years in that state. So salt prevented rot. Salt prevented decay. And so what Jesus is saying necessarily about the world is that if it requires salt, it is in a state of decay. It is in a state of rot. It is in a state of decomposition. Like, it is not progressing to greater heights and to greater health. Naturally, if left on its own, culture and the world is decaying. It's rotting. And that is challenging for us in 2020 to hear. Leslie Newbegin and others talk about something called the myth of progress. That is to say that with every generation, we are getting smarter. With every generation, we are getting better. With every generation, we are progressing as a society. To which the gospel, the message of the Bible, says emphatically, no, we are not. Because there is something about humanity that it is inherently broken. It's inherently in a state of decay. I heard one preacher say it this way. He said, if you don't believe me, look in the mirror. And then dig a picture out of yourself from 20 years ago or 30 years ago. I would never say this to you. This is another preacher saying this to you. We go south quickly. Like, I hit 30 and it's like, right? Like, I just, like, this thing doesn't end pretty. We know, you know, that you wake up and, like, I woke up this morning, my back was sore because I fell down the stairs. Like, who falls down the stairs? I've never done that until this year. As like, we know that our bodies naturally move from a state of health to a state of dead. Like, that is what happens. And apparently, I'm over the hump of the health piece now. It happened. I woke up one morning and it's, but you know, the world is in this state of decline, though people would like to tell us otherwise. This is what the gospel says. This is what Jesus says. The world is in a state of decay. There is something inherently wrong with the culture of the world. And when I look at things that are going on in the world, I think, man, we're not progressing. There are more people enslaved today than in any other time in history. And that slavery is now characterized by child labor and by sex slavery. Like, those are the two defining things of slavery today. And there are more people stuck in slavery now than at any other time in history. Don't tell me the world is progressing to greater heights, because humanity is inherently broken. It needs salt. It needs salt. Light, and I'm going to continue reading. Light, I think, makes just as much sense to us today as it did in Jesus' day. But again, he says, you are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, hear this, and again, underline this. This is what we need to see. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good deeds. But, and it says, but I'm adding the but for emphasis, but glorify your Father in heaven. Again, that last piece, we're not going to talk about that too much today, but that is what the goal of our life should be. That they would see your good deeds, that people in the world would see your good deeds, my good deeds. Hopefully, God willing, I'm able to do a couple in my life, and not glorify me, not glorify you, but glorify God. That's the goal. Like, if I could put it as simply as possible, the goal of your life is to live it in such a way that people glorify Jesus. That's it. And you get to live it out in a number of different ways. Again, light makes sense to us. You walk into a dark room and you turn on the lights. I mean, most people don't like doing things in the dark. When I was growing up, and maybe this happened to you, or maybe you've experienced something similar, my mom and my dad were hilarious at this. My mom is notorious, she still does this, for working in the dark. So what happens is, like, she's an artist, she paints. I mean, she does a number of other things. She's also a pastor at a church right now, and she was an educator in a school system. Like, I mean, I don't know. I will never do as many things as my mom. But she was notorious for starting to paint in the light, and then the light, like, gradually gets dark. We grew up in Montreal, so, like, at, like, 3:30, it starts to get dark outside, and it gets dark. My dad would walk in, and he'd say, like, what are you doing working in the dark? What are you doing working in? And he would turn on the lights. This happened every week for as long as I can remember. Much of my childhood, this was the dynamic. But we don't. There are not many of us who work in the dark, who enjoy working in the dark, who enjoy living in the dark, who enjoy doing things in the dark. You walk into a dark room and you look for the light switch, you turn the lights on, right? Light shines in the darkness. Light pushes back darkness. Again, what Jesus is saying is that there's something inherent about the culture that we live in, right? The world that is dark. If the world needs followers of Jesus to be light in the world, then that means necessarily that the world is dark, that there is a darkness that exists, and to be a follower of Jesus means to what? Step into that darkness and to shine light in the darkness. So Jesus says on both accounts, you are salt in a rotting and decaying and decomposing world, and you are light in a dark world, in a world full of darkness. What does it mean for us to be salt and light? I think as followers of Jesus, we have a couple different options. Because, and you can tell me if this is familiar to you, when some people are faced with the darkness that exists in the world, You get the heck out of Dodge, right? You try to distance yourself from the world. When I read the statistics, and if you're a parent, this should scare you. If you're a parent now, it is normal for teenagers to request nude photos. Like, that is a normal phenomenon now. I didn't know, like, we barely had cell phones when I was a teenager. Like, I'm on that age of, I remember when the internet came in and we got a computer in the house. And I remember my first cell phone, right? My kid, who's not even two, knows how to use my phone. And I don't know where she learned it. Like, it is terrifying to me. And so me, as a dad of a daughter, when I see what happens in the world and when I see the hyper-sexualization that is happening in the world, every part of me wants to withdraw myself and my wife and my daughter and our future daughter and just distance myself from the culture and what is going on. I want to separate us. I want to go and move to like North Bay and homestead and like put up a fence and a wall and guard towers, and like I want to lock that thing down because I do not want my girls growing up in a world that it looks like they're going to grow up in. And so one option that followers of Jesus have is to withdraw ourselves from the world, from the brokenness, from the rot, from the decay, from the darkness. And we can come to church, and we can only go to Christian schools. I went to a Christian school. There's nothing wrong with going to a Christian school, but we can only go to Christian schools, and we can only listen to Christian music, and we can only listen to or watch Christian movies, and we can only read the Bible and no other books, and we can lock down the internet, and we can try. We can try, right? We can only join Christian hockey leagues and soccer leagues and baseball leagues, and we can only do that. That's one option. It is. But Jesus says emphatically, you are the salt of the earth. You are the light that shines in the darkness. And so when I think about it, I think about salt and I think about light. And I think about adding salt, that is, if you and I are salt of the earth. And if you take salt, as a side note, this is not salt, this is sugar, because I forgot my salt at home. Surprise, surprise. You take the salt that we're supposed to be in the world, and you add it to more salt. And all you have is more salt. It doesn't do what it was meant to do. The salt's already salty. The salt's already dry. It's not taking out any moisture. It's not preserving anything. It's not doing anything. It's good for nothing other than to sit here in this nice-looking whatever jar of milk thing that I'm sure you used at every breakfast to pour milk into people. It doesn't do anything. You add salt to salt and nothing happens. The same thing is, you know, you turn a light on. And for sure, you turn a light on in the light and nothing happens. But if you turn the light on when there's no other lights on, then that light shines. But if you add light to an already lit room, you're not making a difference. You're not making an impact in the world. And that's what it means for us as Christians to completely withdraw from the culture. That's what it means for us as Christians to completely hide and cut ourselves off from what is going on in the world. It's to add salt to more salt. It's to add light to what is already lit. And Jesus says, you are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. That means necessarily that you need to be in the world. You need to step into the decomposition. You need to get your hands messy. You need to get dirty because salt is only good if it mixes with that which is decaying. You need to stop the decay in the world. And light is only good if it shines in the places that are dark. And so if you call yourself a follower of Jesus, again, I said that, one, this is non-negotiable, and two, it's going to feel awkward and difficult and challenging, and it might at times require sacrifice of you. Jesus says you need to be where the people are who are hurting, who are broken, who don't know any better, who are living their lives in a state of rot, in a state of decomposition, in a state of one direction and one direction only, death. And Jesus says you need to step into that place and be the salt. That is, stop the decay. And we need to step into the darkness and shine a light there and expose what is wrong with the world. Expose the darkness for what it is. Push back the darkness. And so as much as I want to take my girls and run, I know that that's not what the gospel demands of my life. And that's not what the gospel demands of your life either. See, the gospel is something, and this is what we're going to explore over and over and over again, but the gospel is something that demands action of you and of me. The gospel that is the good news about Jesus' life and his teaching and the miracles that he performed and the healing that he did and then his death and his resurrection isn't just knowledge for you. It's not just about knowing the right thing. It's not just about believing the right thing. And again, like we've always talked about here, it's not just about being saved so that you can go to heaven when you die. The gospel is always something that calls us to action because Jesus is bringing the kingdom of heaven here and now. And part of our role is to be salt and stop the decay and to be light and push back darkness. And so as we conclude this morning, and I'm going to pray for us, I simply want you to ask yourself this one question. And it's, when was the last time you pushed back darkness? If that's a little bit too whatever for you, and when was the last time that you stepped into the darkness and felt it? Like you feel this awkwardness, you feel this, man, I'm like a fish out of water in this situation, and I'm not quite sure what to do, and I'm not quite sure how to act, and I'm not quite sure what people are going to think if they find out that I, you know, believe in Jesus. Like, when was the last time you felt that tension in your life? When was the last time you stopped the decay? Let me pray. God, thanks that you love us. Thanks that you're in this with us. Thanks that you promise things like we are never alone. You'll never leave us. You'll never forsake us. Like, these are promises that you make emphatically to your followers. God, thanks too that you challenge us to step into the darkness, to step into that which is decaying and decomposing and rotting. And you say, at the end of the day, like, your job is to step in and stop the decay and to shine light in the darkness. Thanks, God, though, that when you call us to do that, you promise to be with us. And at the end of the day, what we are called to do as followers of Jesus is to love people who don't know what real love looks like and feels like. You call us to comfort those who mourn without knowing that there is one who comforts greater and better than anything or anyone in this world. You call us to bring peace into situations that only know violence and turmoil. But again, God, it's only through the strength of the Spirit in us and the strength of the love that you show us. So, God, I pray that messages like this would go deep and would challenge us and would make us feel uncomfortable and then would send us out from this place with this tremendous sense of urgency, God, because we know that people die every day without knowing the love of Jesus. And you call us to be a voice into that situation, to be a life into that reality. God, would you do it? Would you bring your kingdom here in Waterdown? Would you bring your kingdom here in Hamilton? Would you bring your kingdom here in Burlington as it is in heaven? God, we believe you are doing this, and we are grateful that you want to use us. So I pray these things in the strongest name, in the name of Jesus. Amen. Amen.